Welcome to Scottish Football Covered, and this weekend it's the Scottish Cup special. As Livy Darkart's no match for spellbinding Saints, a stunner stunts the last championship side of the round. A free-falling Dundee in dumb need of a win, but not by the hairs of my chinny chin chin, says Neil Critchley as Khartoum gives side sudden joy. In a different gear but still speeding, Celtic reached semi-final oasis as majestic Maeda halts David Gray's high-flying Hibs. And finally, Cupset Grandmaster Callum Davidson looked to manoeuvre another shock, but it's Queen to A90 as the Spiders are sent crawling back to Hampden, albeit to sit in the corner and watch. Plus, Steve Clarke cleverly picks a squad that will be cheaper than ever to shuttle as young Scots Jane Wilson and Lennon Miller prepare for their Greek doubleheader. With me today is Stefan and Mac. Stefan, how are you?
I'm pretty good, mate. How are you?
You know what? I am quite happy with the football that went on. There could have been a lot of kind of turgid, long, drawn-out games, but I think we got it all wrapped up. Mac, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good, Finlay. You've put a bit of pressure on me for my intros going forward, but that was brilliant. And I've only done a podcast with a lyrical artist, but I'm good. The football is good, and we've got plenty to talk about.
I mean,
Thank you.
Was literally about to say that. Like, I mean, listen, stunning opening. Not going to say anything to it. Glad I was on mute because it caught me so off guard. I was like, holy, you know what? So, fair play.
Thank you. It's all the prep that I did for this. So, I'm expecting you both to carry this performance. But speaking of performance, we'll start with Celtic versus Hibs. Now, in this one, Dyson Maeda scored his 27th goal of the season, and Adam Eder continued his 2025 turnaround. Celtic got their own on Hibs after that Easter Road loss. Now, Stefan, we'll start with you. At which point does it become boring to wax lyrical about him? I mean, we're going to be talking about him every week, aren't we?
I don't think it does become boring to wax lyrical about Dyson Maeda. He's a phenomenal footballer, I could sit and watch all day long. For as long as that boy wants to run and play ball, I'll sit there and watch because he's unbelievable. Just majestic to watch.
I mean, Mac, that Celtic performance, I mean, Maeda is just one part of it. But they seem to put those two difficult losses behind them. That's kind of long in the memory. That was fantastic from them. They looked a completely different side this week.
Yeah, and it was probably their biggest threat to their treble. That's kind of, don't want to say eluding them because they've kind of became synonymous with Celtic in the last couple of years' trebles. But it was a much needed performance, I think, from the fans, and there was a lot of skepticism, I think, going into it from Celtic fans because the big turnout from the Hibs fans, and obviously 2 weeks prior, they just went to Easter Road and lost. But the way they played, I know it was only 1-0 for such a long time before Ida got the second goal at the very end, but when you look back, they really stopped Hibs from creating anything.
I mean, that Hibs kind of creation, what do we think it was down to? I'll ask you again, Mac, is it Hibs not necessarily playing to their best, or did Celtic really just suffocate them in that game?
I think it's definitely a combination of both. I would say, I think, obviously, they were singing David Gray's name at the end, but I think he might be a bit regretful that he never gave it more of a go. He set up the same way, I suppose, in the with the shape of the team, but it never really caused Celtic any problems. I just think when Celtic are a different animal when they play at home. I don't think they've actually, oh well, no, I know for a fact they've not lost at Celtic Park domestically this season, and there was only, I think it's only Bayern Munich that have beat them there at all this season. So going there, your only chance of a win is probably, or getting some sort of result in cup football, is probably being a bit more defensive and pragmatic. But ultimately, Celtic have just got the quality on the park and on the bench to turn games at the top, at the drop of a hat, I should say.
Stefan, we've alluded to that kind of difference between the two performances, but what do you think it is that made Celtic step up? Was it really just down to that European hangover? Or, I mean, how would you put your finger on that?
No, it wasn't down to a European hangover. It was, you know, I want to give credit to Hibs for that performance at Easter Road 2 weeks ago. despite the VAR controversy that came with it, Hibs deserved to at least win the game. They deserved it. I think a draw would have been probably a little bit unfair on them had that goal stood, but Hibs deserved to win it. So I don't think it was a European hangover. I just think it was maybe Celtic just weren't up to where they should have been for a banging form Hibs, especially at Easter Road. And then coming back, they obviously want to make amends for that. They want to put the wrongs of Easter Road to bed and go in with a performance and get to another semi-final of a domestic trophy and going for the treble. I think we've seen it against Aberdeen back in October when it was 3-3 at Celtic Park, and then people were saying, well, do you know what, this could be a really enticing cup tie at Hampden in November. Celtic just went in and bulldozed them and were like, okay, you want to play, let's play. And Hibs never really got the chance to play on Sunday afternoon. Celtic just came right out of the traps. McGregor's shot on target, Hatate's effort, there was instances where Maeda blazes a ball over the bar. Celtic were just right at it. And Hibs could have, there was nothing Hibs could do. Celtic were just at it.
That's a very good point. But I also had this feeling that when I was watching it, that, and this speaks, I'll be speaking about a few performances here, kind of epitomized this late form for a lot of players. So, for example, Maeda, fantastic player. We've seen that, we've discussed that. I want to talk about a couple of Celtic players first. I'll go Adam Ida, Mac. How has this happened? He started the season. He's always had that price tag weighing down on him. It just looks like he's kind of coming into his own now. He's never been a flamboyant player. He's never been one to beat his chest. But are you in a way pleased that things are kind of going his way now?
No, definitely. I think he probably plays better with like that pressure of just being Celtic's sole number nine. Like when he came in last season, there was a it became it turned into a reliance on him when he came off the bench. He's just credited with so many last minute goals. They kind of go hand in hand with each other, either in late goals. There's so many just off the top of my head, including one that weekend just passed. I think it's he plays better with the responsibility. Since Kyogo's left now, it's like flicked a switch. Obviously, he had a wee poor spell. It was terrible at Easter Road. Well, maybe terrible was a bit too far, but it wasn't great. And then went a wee spell without scoring. But overall, since 2025 came around, he's been Celtic's man. I know Maeda's been playing through the middle, but Adam Ida knows his role when he comes off the bench. He's there to showed up the game, he's there to put out a sight, and he does that to perfection.
No, he did. He definitely kind of had one of those typical Adam Ida performances that fans knew, and especially Brendan Rodgers knew he had in them. But there was a player maybe has not been showing those kind of performances. And Stefan, let me know if you disagree here, but are we seeing maybe a little bit of a tired or, let's say, lesser version of the Nicholas Kuhn we've seen in the kind of starting months of the year?
No, I don't think so. I think Nicholas Kuhn has been one of Celtic's best players this season, undoubtedly. Has he hit the heights as he has as early in the season or as into December and things as we got? No, but that's wingers at the pretty much at the centre of it, is wingers are on and off, and for the longest time, Nicholas Kuhn was on it. He's not been off it, but he's not been at that sort of level that we've kind of seen him at. But he's still been at a decent level where he's still, contributing to the team. I just want to touch quickly back to Mac's point about Adam Ida, because Finlay, you mentioned the heavy price tag weighing down on him. I'm not fully convinced on Adam Ida. I have to be really honest. I think the goals he's scored for Celtic have been massive. You look at the goals he scored last season against Hibs away, Motherwell away, the goal at Ibrox, the goal in the cup final. Big game player, big massive goals. You look at the goals he scored this season in the Champions League against Aston Villa, the last minute, last gasp winner against Young Boys. Unbelievable player, and you're going to think, what do you mean you're not convinced on him? £9 million. I think that was Norwich. Norwich one I watch with that. I think he's a great player, but I think the £9 million price tag was probably a little bit too high for him. And is he ever going to go into that player that's starting every single game as Celtic's number nine? Right now, a player that was on the wing for the past 3.5 years is currently occupying that main striker spot.
No,
I don't know.
now that's an absolutely fair point, because I think for all the talk of, it doesn't matter how much he cost, he provided those months, like those moments, the kind of saying it's worth the price, the price is worth the ticket alone, or that kind of nonsense. But he has definitely had a bit of a tough time. And I think maybe that's one for another time, as we kind of had these conversations about Dessers, about Ida. These struggling strikers who maybe aren't either getting the credit they deserve or maybe overinflated credit based on the club they're at. But I think we'll park that for another time and instead focus our attention on the Friday Night Lights. And that was as Hearts beat Dundee 3-1. So that was a Khartoum who had fans absolutely purring with a brace, including not one, but two contenders for second best goals of the round. I mean, Joe Shaughnessy had leveled the score in the 50th minute. But it's Simon Murray's own goal and Khartoum's second that could put the game to bed and made sure Dundee's torrid run of form continued. Now, Mac, we'll start with you. I mean, how badly are things going for Dundee?
They're in free fall at the minute, aren't they? I think you can hold on to being in the cup competition as sort of an excuse, to be honest, that you're conceding the poor run of form, but you've creating these magical moments of a cup run. Tony Docherty's not been able to do that, so all focus shifts back to the league. They really do need to get their house in order quickly, because I think they're in trouble. I've said for months St Johnstone are going down, but the gap's only 3 points, out and over. Dundee were a team, I think they got top six last season, didn't they? And then they were in and around that, and then out of nowhere, lose Luke McCowan, they're losing like Luke Hamnett in the season. The word to describe it is free fall, like I already did.
Stefan, I'm sure you won't disagree with that. That's one, I mean, out with the cup competitions, one league win in 10. What do you think has happened to Dundee since that aforementioned top six finish?
Well, again, like Matt touched on it, they've lost their, one of their best players from last season, Luke McCowan. He's gone to Celtic. I think that can always be hard right at the start of the campaign when that happens. And I feel like for Tony Docherty, it's something that, considering where they were last season, and then they weren't always in this position this season, I just don't know what's happened. I do still think they will have enough to stay up. I don't think they'll go down automatically. I do agree with Matt that they are in free fall. What do they do to turn that around? Honestly, I don't know. But they've got a couple of games left for the, before the split to do it, and they're not the easiest games because they've got a Dundee derby, they've got Rangers at home, they've got St Mirren at home, and they've got Hibs away. If you were looking at four games to, that you didn't want at this stage of the season, Dundee have it.
And they definitely got a tough task ahead of them. And they were comfortably dispatched, albeit not 6-0 this time, but still pushed out by a Hearts side that actually have made a lot of ground under Neil Critchley. I think things stalled a little bit in the early days. They are sat in seventh and they are now in the Scottish Cup semi-final. Mac, they're not just winning games, they look quite good doing it.
No, they do. I think that Neil Critchley, kind of, when he came in, there was a few eyebrows raised, but it's become a bit of a buzzword for me. But it's just that fresh perspective of Neil Critchley coming in, analysing the squad. He's got rid of some players, and then it's the guys like Cabanga, guys like his name's escaped me, Carter, who scored twice. It's guys at the end just inject something new into the side, and it just said the performances are complementing the results as well. I know it wasn't quite 6-0 like they beat Dundee just there, but if you look at the last few games, they're picking up points which you would argue they wouldn't have picked up under Stephen Naismith. And then even the games are losing, like when they lost to Rangers 3-1, that was a game Hearts probably should have won the shoot, and they could have had a penalty as well when the score was 2-1 to Rangers, or one each at the point, I think it was. So now, yeah, the performances are definitely getting better, and Gorgie will be happy to see that for sure.
Well, that's one thing you touched on is maybe Hart should have had a penalty. There was another moment that I noticed. I say that like I was the only one, but that Mo Silla tackle on Vargas as Vargas is racing past the halfway line and it looks like he's the last man. Mo Silla. Stefan, is that a red card? Have I missed something here? Or is it just, does it feel like that wasn't given because there's almost an element of someone feel, I mean, it sounds shocking to say, but did someone feel bad for Dundee? I don't understand how that wasn't a red card.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it wasn't a red card. Myself, it's I could go down a massive rabbit hole here of Scottish officials and officiating in the game as a whole. Yeah, you're not losing it, Finlay. I'm in
I'm
agreement here
glad to
with
hear
you.
it. Now, there was a positive to talk about, and that is Sander Khartoum. I'm also going to admit this. My eagle eyes that led me to see that Vargas tackle also saw me miss Khartoum. That signing kind of flew under the radar for me, signed late January from Brann in Norway. I mean, that he's been at the club for a couple of weeks now, but what a way to announce yourself to the world. Not one, but two incredible goals, Mac.
No, exactly like you were saying, he's hardly set the world alight in his other performances. Not saying he's been bad, but I don't think he was great at Easter Road in the Derby defeat. But if you're going to announce yourself, it's going to be doing stuff like that. The two strikes, you said earlier, he had his own competition for goal of the match at the two of them. And then I just think Simon Murray will be glad the other two goals that Hart scored were that good, because no one would talk about his own goal. He'd have been the last person in the Dundee team wanting to score for Hearts. But yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. It's what you want to see from a late January signing. And I really like that market, the Scandinavian market. I think a lot of Scottish teams have touched on it, including Celtic and Rangers. Well, yeah, Rangers as well. They've touched on it, and it's usually you unearth a good wee gem. So I think it's definitely a market that most Scottish teams should follow.
No, and at 29 years old, this isn't really one you would have expected, but maybe this is the Jamestown analytics effect. Simon Murray as well, contributing it. He's known for kind of playing his part both ends of the field. He won't want to be known for that specific moment. But unfortunately, that chance to end the kind of run without a cup that stretches all the way back to 1910 slips away from Dundee's fingers. They are out and Hearts progress. Now, the next game I wanted to talk about was Aberdeen Queen's Park, and that featured a dabba double and goals from Nisbet and Shinny on his 600th appearance to send the Dons on their way to the semi-finals. Not before a response from Zach Rudden, albeit too little, too late. Now, Stefan, Nisbet, that is a tremendous finish, and we'll get on to his performances and the news concerning his call-up. But if you're part of the stereotype, if you're a championship team, as Queen's Park are, should set pieces not be your bread and butter?
Yeah, I mean, I think set pieces should be everyone's bread and butter. It depends. Like, it depends on ultimately how good the set piece is. I can't help but feel bad for Queen's Park. They had I feel bad for the run they've had, right? They're probably no one expected them to be facing Aberdeen in the quarterfinals. But I just thought it was like bad luck based off of the two games that they did end up facing the two out of the top three teams in the top flight. And they won the hardest one and then obviously lost out to Aberdeen. You spoke about it at the start of the podcast. Callum Davidson is that cup set kind of manager, won the trophy with St Johnstone. 4-1 looks really, really bad on paper. And I really feel quite bad for Queen's Park from it. But take nothing away from the Aberdeen result.
I mean, I don't want to take anything away from that result, but you alluded to that run that Queen's Park have had. It's been David versus Goliath after Goliath after Goliath. Whereas Aberdeen really feel like the bully, the 6 foot kind of 13-year-old in a playground for the 4-year-olds. They've faced Elgin, Dunfermline, and Queen's Park to get there. And all of that happening whilst they're in this stinker of a run of form. Mac, are they kind of coming back into themselves at the perfect time now that they've actually got a legitimate an opponent?
I guess you could say that, but I would go as far to say I've never really kind of bought into the hype of Aberdeen. Like, obviously momentum's a big thing in football, but even when they're winning, it's just they rarely win comfortably. Even their late draw against Dundee United, it was a last minute equaliser. Obviously results like that get a good feel about the place, and then you go into the next game and you can beat anyone. I think that's why their unbeaten run stretched as long as it did. Just because of that sort of feel about the place, but I'm not entirely convinced by them. But look, if they're getting results by hook or by crook, I don't think it really matters in the long run.
No, it doesn't matter for now. But I think maybe there are some kind of things to talk about in that performance that are perhaps more convincing than the team itself. And that's Kevin Nisbet. That first goal that I talked about, really excellent finish. Of course, now he's been rewarded with a Scotland call up. And he's got in front of him Dabba, who scored a double. Do we feel that maybe Nisbet's been pushed by that competition? And Stefan, what is that another strong signing from Aberdeen? They've seemed to have done a fair bit of good business from January.
Yeah, I think Kevin Nisbet's that type of player that, and I think this maybe just as everyone, like when you've got someone in that same role as you in any sort of job, that competitive edge sort of comes out and it's like, okay, well, he's doing really well. I want to do really well. And that kind of motivates you to do better. And athletes are no different, right? I think probably they're more intense with it. They're more competitive. They're like, okay, well, they'll see it a little bit differently. Kevin Nisbet, I've always liked him as a player since his time at Hibs. Obviously went down south for a period. Now he's back at Aberdeen. I don't think he's played that badly. He's been rewarded with a call up. In terms of Dabba, I think he's a really astute signing from Aberdeen. He's came in. And he's had, he's only had, in terms of Premiership games, I think he's only had four or five. He's scored goals in it. He's got goals in the Scottish Cup. There's a player in there. Is he the level of Miofsky? Probably not. But still very, very good signings and two very good options to have up front. Considering Aberdeen still have great players like Papagay and in their team as well. Like they could be a threat going forward. But similar to Mac, the form that they found themselves in at the start of the season didn't really buy into it. I thought it was good and it was great and it was exciting, but then the run they obviously went on, it feels like they're now trying to come out the other side of that, and it just feels the wheel's turning slightly, but it's not going anywhere fast anytime soon, if that makes sense.
No, it does. I mean, I am sharing this podcast with two cynics. Hopefully, there's a little bit of faith in the Saints. They were 1-0 winners over Livingston. I mean, it was a clash that I doubt you'd want to kind of order on VHS and have in your home. But it's one that you might see again in the relegation playoff come the end of the season. And advantage Saints, in this case, as Simo Valakari's side squeak past Livingston thanks to Graham Kerry's 30-yard screamer. I mean, Mike, I'm going to have to burden this on you. Can you talk to me a bit about that game as a whole? What did you make of
I can talk to you about the goal. Maybe not so much about
it?
the game, but we spoke off air. It was kind of, you don't want to say it, but it was kind of the game you expected when you see Livingston drawn at home to St Johnstone with the greatest of respect to two teams. That's, to be fair, that sounds like a slight, but that's just the way David Martindale shapes up. Like, they were hard to beat, and they've really surpassed my expectations in the championship this season. I thought when they get relegated, this would be the end of Livingston, but like a zombie, they're coming back up to haunt me still. It's just they were unlucky, probably not get a penalty. You know, I think another referee might have given it, and one of yous can maybe jump in. I don't know if there was VAR last night, but if there was, that might have took a look at it. And then, well, the highlight of the game, the goals, Graham Kerry, he's got that in his locker, but that might just be his best. I know Sports Scene showed one he scored for St Mirren 12 years ago after the game, but I think that one, just with the context of the game, was absolutely brilliant. And you could just kind of tell the way he took his first touch, he was going to hit it, but I don't think he would have thought he'd go to that perfect in the top corner.
No, and what I like most about that is that he went for a second one that, were there any fans in that stand, probably would have taken a few teeth out. But you mentioned that you were surprised by that Livingston performance. And this is something that I wanted to allude to because I think I'm a big fan of David Martindale. And he's continued, he's really banged the drum on this one, and that is the expanding the league. And he says that whether or not he wins or loses, however his team perform, it's not a case of wanting Livingston up there, it's just for the game. And Stefan, does that performance give any credence? I know that's not his intention, but give any credence to that view that maybe there should be an 18-team league with Livingston in it?
We spoke about this off air. It was hardly an advert for Scottish football in itself, let alone an advert for an expanded league. I think, bar the goal and bar the penalty, which should or shouldn't have been, it was a pretty rough game of football to watch, and and I'm sure other people probably didn't watch large parts of it because it just. It is like, as you alluded to at the start, it's the kind of performance you expected when you heard Livingston and St Johnstone were going to be drawn together on a Monday night out at the Tony Macaroni on that surface. It was just no advert at all. Do I want an expanded league? Yes. Do I think an expanded league would be a good thing for Scottish football? 100%. Would it mean that we're not playing the same teams 3 to 4 times a season? Absolutely. Is that a good thing? Yeah, of course it is. Does it bring more chances of revenue and TV money into the game? Absolutely. That last night literally puts a bullet in that puts a hole in the theory that it could be exciting because sports scene picked up because it's a cup tie. If that's a run-of-the-mill Premiership game, with all due respect, Sky Sports and Premier Sports, they're looking at that and they're saying, I'm not picking that up because if you look inside the stadium was half empty. It was more than half empty. No one was picking it up. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on it. And I part for the goal and the penalty, pretty uneventful.
Well, I'll give David Martindale your number and he can have a chat with you. And there's something else that I wanted to address briefly. But first, I'm just going to run through the draw. It's a very quick one. With the results, Hearts are going to take on Aberdeen in one semi-final, and St Johnstone are going to face Celtic. That's some reward for getting to the semi-final. St Johnstone, Mac, have given Celtic, I think it's three quarters of the allocation for this one. And they said it's a financial decision from themselves, despite the fact that it gives Celtic that considerable advantage. Do you have difficulty accepting that, or does that seem fair given the club's finances?
Yeah, you can look at it from two angles. I don't want to just look at it from my Celtic fan perspective, but it's a sensible decision. They probably get one eye on next season and want to bounce back up to the Premiership if they do go down. And because I think Celtic can win the league if they win all, win their, they have to beat Rangers, and then Rangers have to win their next two games, and then Celtic can win the league at McDermott Park. So obviously, it runs the risk of Celtic fans being in the home end as well, which just causes its own issues. But I can see why some St Johnstone fans would be upset. You know, you're giving the best team in the league already a bigger advantage, but at the same time, financially, it's quite a sensible decision. You don't want to see empty seats, and especially this game will be on television. You don't want to see empty seats when you're trying to advertise and market your game, but I can also see why some fans of the home team would be upset. But like St Johnstone haven't done it just to cash in. They tested it in Celtic and Rangers this season, and they said attendances haven't improved from the home fans. So they're just looking out for their best interest and ultimately Celtic's interest as well.
Stefan, do you have a particular take on that,
No,
the
I'm very
issue?
much in agreement with Mac. Like as you said, you can look at it from two perspectives. For me, it's a really spot on perspective from St Johnstone. They're a football club. They're a business first and foremost. If they don't have money, they don't exist. So of course they're going to capitalize on the gain, and the Celtic fans will want to see their team potentially win the league. Of course, they're going to try and take advantage of that and say, okay, well, we can get another, what, 5,000, 6,000 kind of tickets sold. That's going to be more money for us to grow as a football club and bring players in next season and pay for players we already have, improve infrastructure around the club. Anyone that's disagreeing with it is probably going to be a St Johnstone fan thinking, well, okay, we're giving an advantage to the best team in the league. With all due respect, Celtic don't need any advantage to go and play St Johnstone at McDermott Park. I don't think that advantage exists because St Johnstone have decided to give the three stands to Celtic fans. It exists because Celtic are the financially the strongest team in the country. The advantage exists because their revenue is multiple times that of St Johnstone. That argument that it's an advantage because there's more fans in the stadium, nonsense.
No, quite right. And, we've been talking a lot about the guests in their house. So I think it would be rude now not to discuss the hosts themselves, and that is Hampden's own Scotland. And Steve Clarke just named today his side for the Greek double header. I don't know if both of you have had a time to run through this, but does anything jump out to you? Now, there is the inclusion of a young James Wilson and the prodigal son, Lennon Miller. But anything else surprise you with Clark's side?
Not for me. I looked through the team earlier, and I don't think there's any area where you can look and say the players that have been called up didn't deserve to be called up. Maybe, well, I don't know. Grant Hanley would probably be the Grant Hanley and Anthony Ralston are probably the two I would think. Jeez, okay. I don't know why they've been included, but other than that, no, I think it's a really strong selection from Steve Clarke. And I'm really pleased with the introduction of James Wilson because he's had a fantastic season at Hearts. Someone will need to do like a deep dive on it, but I must be the youngest call up in some time. And then obviously Lennon Miller, I think we've waxed lyrical about him on the podcast for the longest time. Of course he deserves it. He's been Motherwell's best player this season. It really is a no-brainer from Steve Clarke. I think it took him a long time to really understand that bringing in young Scottish players into it, like Tommy Conway, like Ben Doak, like Lennon Miller, like James Wilson, I feel like it's taken him a bit too long to get to the same bus stop as everyone else, but we're finally here.
Of course, Ben Doak is injured, and that's why he's not in the squad. And Mike, I could be wrong with this. Stefan mentioned that Lennon Miller hasn't been in the squad before, but Steve Clarke's finally got, given youth a chance. But my own understanding of it was that Steve Clarke was, in a way, trying to keep that hype train, slow it down, really, just reel in all this praise that had been heaped on such a young player, only 18 years old, captain of Motherwell, being talked about as, Scotland's Messi. We'd seen the pressure and what that does to a player like Ryan Gold, another injury who will be absent from this squad. Is that fair to say that maybe Steve Clarke knew how good he was? He was just wanting to maybe keep him out of the limelight with the under 21s for now?
I guess you could say that, and I know the under 21s had important games coming up as well. But if you're talking about how good a player is, I don't know why you just don't include him in the squad first and foremost. Stefan, to answer your question, I've read today, James Wilson, if he appears, he'll be the youngest Scotland player for 134 years. So that's basically since record began.
That's another astounding stat. I love that.
I got that just for this. Then, if Finlay, you asked if there was any surprises, I just like interject. I was quite surprised not to see Luke McCowan, and I thought he would have been a shoo-in, to be honest. And then looking at the goalkeepers, I know third choice goalkeeper is hardly worth worrying about, but Kieran Slicker he's the mystery man. I've never even seen a photograph of this guy, so I'm not 100% sure he actually exists. I think it's just a name on a sheet of paper. But and then James Wilson, I was actually really surprised, but in a different way from McCowan and Slicker. I think that's a it's ambitious with Steve Clarke. It's a sign we're going in the right direction.
Can I ask you a question on that then, Mac? You surprised with the omission of Luke McCowan. Who does he come in? Who does he replace in that midfield for you?
Probably Kenny McLean. I've not kept tabs with Kenny McLean, but I just think with the introduction of James Wilson and Lennon Miller and then Max Johnson again, I think it's like a changing of the guard, and Luke McCowan, I think, would, if he was in this squad, they'd prove his worth.
So I've asked that question, right, and I feel like quite an idiot for asking it. I did not even see Kenny McLean's name on that team sheet, on
There
that
we go.
selection list. It kind of tells me, I don't know, the guy. I'm not going to come on him slag Kenny McLean. He scored great penalties when we were qualifying for the Euros, and a great pass for, I think it was, Lyndon Dykes in Norway. But besides that, pretty uninspiring. So okay, no, I mean, I would agree with that. That's a fair sentiment, I think.
Now, actually, this midfield is maybe the strongest part of the squad. And, I personally have a little bit of concern. And I'll start with you, Stefan. If you agree with me, it seems that every part, Kieran Slicker, first of all, has as many appearances or league appearances as all three of us combined. That is a big fat zero. He's played one game this season for Ipswich. First of all, he's 22 years old. So does it feel maybe like we're sending out the wrong message in having a player like that in the squad?
He's 22. He's young. He's currently at Ipswich, where he started his career at Manchester City. I don't know why we need three goalkeepers, to be quite honest. I think Craig Gordon and Liam Kelly would have. I don't know any other Scottish goalkeepers aside from maybe Angus Gunn that could be in there. But I mean, that's a day for a, that's another day for
Yeah, I
that
think that
question.
that one's an injury.
Ah,
But
okay.
the other options would be Robbie McCrory, John McCracken, or Xander Clark. So
Yeah,
it's
so
it doesn't really scream confidence, does it?
it doesn't, but it's also, do we need three goalkeepers? Is this like a thing we have to have three goalkeepers? Because I mean, we were talking about Luke McCowan earlier on, but I mean, you don't bring a guy that's no played any minutes this season for his club. I mean, what's he? Yeah, he's, as far as I can see, he's not played any Premier League games for Ipswich. So, why is he? Why is he in the squad? I don't know. Steve Clarke must see something that other people don't, but I don't know what he's seeing unless he's watching Ipswich Town train.
Well, maybe that's the whole problem, is he wants to see what everyone else can't, because no one's actually seen him unless you have looked back to that one FA Cup game I think he played in. So maybe actually just figuring out what he could actually do.
Yeah.
But Mac, the rest of the pitch, James Wilson, everyone is very pleased for him. It seems already too soon to say that the weight of Scotland's attack is going to rest on his shoulders, but Jay Adams, Kevin Nisbet, Tommy Conway, and James Wilson, they're in place of a Lyndon Dykes, for example, or a Shankland. These are not prolific goal scorers at kind of international level, James Wilson aside. That's between the three of the others, seven goals between them.
Yeah, I think it's probably James Wilson's. It's probably the perfect camp for him to take a claim for future squads. But I just realistically, I don't see him getting much game time. Maybe a couple of minutes at the end, but because Tommy Conway's still looking to break his way in, it's a bit of a stronghold between Che Adams and Lyndon Dykes. Obviously, Dykes is injured. I just think he's got James Wilson in the squad. If he uses him, is a different question. Hopefully he does. I was reading an article earlier. He invited James Wilson to train with one of the senior camps before when they needed bodies from the under 21s, and he was really impressed with him since then. So maybe he does see something special in him, just like Neil Crixley and Stephen Naismith did. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, James Wilson gets a run out. But recently, with the magnitude of the game as well, I think it would be unrealistic to see him.
Now, I hope to see him in action, but another player I'm excited to have light up the stage is Lewis Ferguson, returning from injury. Bologna player, was their player of the season last year, suffered an injury, kept him out of action for a while. One of three players in Italy in that midfield, not to mention their fourth with Che Adams for Torino. Is that maybe the kind of jewel in the crown? We've got, Stefan, a lot of grafters, a lot of water carriers in that midfield, but no one really has shown that they can dazzle. Maybe Lewis Ferguson can do it as Lennon Miller kind of finds his feet on the international stage.
I love Lewis Ferguson. I think he's a fantastic footballer. I liked him when he was at Aberdeen, and ever since he's been out in Italy, he's just been a revelation. I think Motta, when he went to Juve, was probably thinking, "I want to take him with me." Obviously, then gets hit with an injury, etc., and he's out. But no, I really like Lewis Ferguson. I think he does have the ability to dazzle and light up that midfield. It really is like the Italian job almost with the midfield three there, with Gilmore and McTominay. I think for me, and I think it's one thing Scotland miss, right, is that presence of Callum McGregor in the midfield. And some people will say, okay, well, I disagree with that. I always thought Callum McGregor was a stalwart in the midfield for Scotland. I think Lewis Ferguson could probably pick up that the sorry yeah pick up the ball and run with it where McGregor's ultimately left it. So I would really hope to see Lewis Ferguson right in the crux of that midfield come later on in March in Piraeus against Greece and at Hampden.
No, it's quite right. We're quite glad to see finally a strong midfield that actually can go toe to toe with kind of a lot of nations in Europe. But Mac, this defense, it's not so much a warship as a kind of creaky old fishing boat. We've got some names in there. I'm surprised you can read or recognize through all the bandages. I mean, how have some of these, Scott McKenna, Grant Hanley, they're just two of the names. Even Ryan Porteous. I'm surprised that, there isn't more to choose from, but that maybe is that the reality of the situation for Scotland?
Yeah, I think Steve Clarke's probably got one of the hardest jobs in the country is trying to find two available decent centre halves to play for Scotland. And well, Bull is the best of what we've got. We've just got to learn to deal with that. That's the intricacy of international football, I guess. But it is quite, well, I was about to say it's quite bleak. I like Ryan Porteous. I know he had that stupid red card against Germany, but I don't think that was the defining moment in that game. I think Germany were going to turn us over regardless. I would say, though, Grant Hanley and Scott McKenna, it's just, I never even knew Grant Hanley was at Birmingham, and I've been watching quite a lot of Birmingham this season because they're always on the telly. I don't know. I would maybe have brought in Josh Doig or Greg Taylor, so you've got another left back, and then move Kieran Tierney to left centre half. But then, look, who knows? It's hard to find two decent centre halves of Scotland. I think Steve Clarke's probably done the best as he can.
No, Grant Hanley must have some kind of off-field talent that we don't know about because just nine appearances this season and he's never really looked all that convincing in a Scotland shirt in recent times.
See,
But
on Jack Hendry, how
he,
I don't understand how he's in the squad. Does Steve Clarke go out to Saudi Arabia and watch Jack Hendry play?
he must just be watching those games on TV. Like, I mean, maybe he just really likes the Saudi Pro League.
Because I think it's questionable. Like I was never the biggest fan of Jack Hendry when he was at Celtic. I thought he always had like a bit of a mistake in him. He obviously he left Celtic. he's went to try and play his trade elsewhere. He's just never been a player for me that Scotland centre backs always think of Gary Caldwell, David Weir, McManus, centre backs like that, Charlie Mulgrew, like decent centre backs. I think we have really have the bottom of the barrel in terms of it. I think Ryan Portis, as Matt alluded to earlier, I think he's probably the standout. Him and John Souter, probably the two that you could say to pair them together. Because Hanley, McKenna, and Hendry just they don't. It's just cannon fodder at this point. Kieran Tierney was successful when he played in that sort of back three, centre back. But then that meant that your right hand side was kind of weak because you would need someone to fill that. Do you bring in a Josh Doig? I'd be for it, but I just centre backs for the abundance of talent we have in midfield and we have going forward, it severely lacks in defence. The only saving grace is Scotland have a good keeper and Craig Gordon. Nearly caught myself out there, but I tweeted something a couple of years ago about Craig Gordon not being world class. So, going to stick with that and say, decent keeper.
I mean, on the kind of looks of things, it will have to do. However, it's a very exciting time for Scotland. This kind of double header that I mentioned against Greece, a real chance to show where they are. They're not quite on the level of the top teams in that Group A, that top division of the Nations League, but maybe they've got a chance to show that they are amongst the best of the rest. And, we're kind of talking about people defending their honor, defending titles. I want to move on to something very interesting now for the final part of the show. And that is, how would you call it? The SmackDown versus Raw of quizzes, if you will. Because we've got a new challenger for Mac. Stefan has a burgeoning reputation from his early days. He's not been seen for a while, but we've got ourselves a bit of a clash here. How are you two feeling about this? I've prepared, just to let you know, a more difficult quiz than you would have for the rest of us.
Okay, I mean, well, I'm nervous, right? Because for the longest time, and I'm not nervous in the sense that I don't think I've talked myself into a corner here. Like Matt's incredibly good. I just think he's been coming up against substandard opposition. So that is more of a slight on that than anything else. So I'm feeling a little bit nervous, but I'm here to try and take that crown.
Mike. Fighting talk, do you feel like that's a kind of egg slap to the face, or you okay with that?
I'm just going to do my talking on the pitch.
Oh, ice cold, ice cold. Okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to tuck Mac away for a bit and get started with Stefan. And this is the moment everyone has been waiting for. It is the quiz. I've prepared 12 questions for the two of them, just in case we're neck and neck by 10. And I'm going to start off with Stefan. And Stefan, when you're ready, let me know and I'll kick you off.
I'm good to go.
Question one. Who did Celtic lose to in the 1970 Champions League final?
Feyenoord.
How many Scottish clubs has Alex Gogic played for?
Three.
Dundee United won the 2010 Scottish Cup final, but who did they beat?
Rangers.
Who has more goals in the league this season, Lawrence Shanklin or Moussa Dramé?
Drammy.
How many Scottish Cup finals did Dundee United lose under Jim McLean?
Two.
Last season, Theo Bear pulled up trees, scoring 15 league goals for Motherwell, but where did he move to in the summer?
Oh, jeez. Coventry.
In 1888, brother Wilfred established Celtic, but what was his real name? I'll give you half a point for each one.
That's horrendous. Pass. That's horrendous.
Which Premiership game had the lowest attendance last season?
Oh, Livingston, Ross County.
Victor Griffith signed for St. Johnstone in January, but which Central American country does he represent?
Peru.
Ron
Central American.
Ronnie Simpson was Scotland's oldest debutant for 53 years until 2020, but who replaced him?
Debutant. Andy Considine.
A Shot at Glory was a Scottish football film released in 2002 starring Robert Duvall, but which famous player co-starred?
Pass.
Which club did Dundee sign Glenn Kamara from?
Which club did Dundee sign Glenn Kamara from?
Yep, which Premier League?
Arsenal.
Perfect, that is you done.
That's horrendous. That Brother Wilfred question's a
Yes,
shocker. He'll get that. That is shocking, by the way. Was not expecting that at all.
Mac, welcome to the quiz. Have you
Here
had time to kind of, warm up, hit the bags?
we go. No, I haven't, but
Yeah.
it's all locked away in here. You don't need to warm up.
All right. Let me know when you're ready and we'll kick off.
I'm neither than you up.
All right. Question one. Who did Celtic lose to in the 1970 Champions League final?
Final.
How many Scottish clubs has Alex Gogic played for?
Three.
Dundee United won the 2010 Scottish Cup final, but who did they beat?
Ross County.
Who has more goals in the league this season, Lawrence Shanklin or Moussa Dramé?
Mr. Drammy.
How many Scottish Cup finals did Dundee United lose under Jim McLean?
One.
Last season, Theo Aubert pulled up trees, scoring 15 league goals for Motherwell, but where did he move to in the summer?
Mets.
In 1888, Brother Wilfred established Celtic, but what was his real name? Half a point for each.
Oh, pass.
Which Premiership game had the lowest attendance last season?
Livingston versus Ross County.
Victor Griffiths signed for St Johnstone in January, but which Central American country does he represent?
Hey, Costa Rica.
Ronnie Simpson was Scotland's oldest debutant for 53 years until 2020, but who replaced him?
Andrew Considine.
A Shot at Glory was a Scottish football film released in 2002 starring Robert Duvall, but which famous player co-starred?
Alan McCoist.
Which club did Dundee sign Glenn Kamara from?
Arsenal.
Well, let me just tally up those scores.
I think that's pretty close. I didn't get the Brother Wilfred question either. That was a shocking question, by the way. I will give him that. I think he's done it. I think he's pipped me, and I will take it. That was a really good quiz.
That was a good quiz. I thought it was under time conditions as well. Actually, I was kind of rushing, but
Yeah, I just couldn't be bothered to time it.
yeah,
I was more curious about the answers themselves, but I'll run through them just in case. Obviously, who Celtic lost to in the 1917 Champions League final? You both got that. That was Feyenoord. How many Scottish clubs has Alex Gogic played for? It was three: Hamilton Accies, Hibs, and St Mirren. Dundee United won the Scottish Cup final in 2010, but they beat Ross County.
I'm raging. I said Rangers because I meant to say Ross County. I don't even know why I said that.
Who has more goals in the league this season, Lawrence Shanklin or Moussa Dramé? It's Lawrence Shanklin. He has four.
Ah,
Dramé has three.
raging.
How many Scottish Cup finals did Dundee United lose under Jim McLean? It was six.
Oof. I
Yep.
was way out.
I know. I don't think anyone expected that, to be honest. Last season, Theo Bear pulled up trees. He moved in the summer to Auxerre,
Yeah,
where he has
I knew it was in France.
scored one goal, I think.
I did not know that.
Brother Wilfred's real name, Andrew
Andrew Cairns.
Cairns. Which game had the lowest attendance last season? Livy versus Ross County. You were both correct. It's
That was a guess.
1,142
That was a
people.
dare. I mean, it was a
Yeah, well,
guess.
you were both right on that one. Victor Griffiths signed for St. John's in January. Which Central American country does he represent? It was
Panama.
Panama.
Oh, I've never got that.
You both found Scotland's oldest debutant for 53 years, and that was Andrew Considine. And Mac, well done on this one. A Shot at Glory was a Scottish football film. It starred Ally McCoist. Kind of famous because Ally McCoist, of course, a Rangers legend, wearing a Celtic shirt in that film. And you both got the final one right. Glenn Kamara was signed by Dundee from Arsenal, which, if I have tallied these up correctly,
Two. I think
gives
it's like what, 9-7?
Stefan 5 points.
Five.
Five. I think
All
you
right.
got one, two. Which one did you get as well? The Ross
Yeah, that's
County
more
game.
than you, Archie and Robbie combined, so I'll take
Whoa, 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 whoa.
that.
I'll do the hosting here. Thank you. However, it does leave you 2 points short of
Now we'll play back.
Mac Kelly
They're
and
undisputed.
still undisputed champion of Scottish football covered. I
None of my
mean,
questions were up to date and relevant.
oh, listen, if anything, consider it a compliment to how much I think you knew about this season or even the last few years today. I had to go into the annals of history
Aye, the last 40 years. I mean,
40.
Brother Wilfred, what a question.
I mean, yes, maybe I did go about 130 years into the past for that one. But I was actually, you know what? I think you both did fantastically well. So I wanted to thank you for taking part in that quiz. Next week, I think Mac is going to have a chance to crush a can if there is no one, unless there is no one but Stefan to fight. So I think that just about wraps up everything. We will be back next week, but I just wanted to give a special thanks, first and foremost, to Stefan, our producer, for coming onto the show, and Mac, obviously, undisputed champion of the quiz, and just general good egg. But other than that, you've been listening to Scottish Football Covered. I hope you've had a lovely time, and we look forward to having you back next week for another very special episode. Bye for now.